shot! Oh, baby, what a play!
This is Jeff Fedotin with Believe in Chiefs on the Believe Network, Kansas City's number one sports podcast network, the only place with a show for every team in KC and more. We believe in our teams. Do you believe? On this week's show, the Kansas City Stars' Blair Kirkhoff joins former Kansas City Chiefs offensive lineman Joe Valerio. Blair, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be here. We're still in the afterglow, you know.
So I was going to ask you, Blair, how's it, you know, how's everybody feeling, both fan base, media, team, you know, that you've had exposure to? Everybody's still kind of really enjoying it and really reeling in the win?
No doubt. I think it's still cloud nine around here. You know, I do remember what it was like 4 years ago. And of course, you know, the one 4 years ago broke the 50-year drought. So this one, you know, I don't want to say fans are used to it. That's certainly not accurate. But I think there's a different sense of appreciation because this time they weren't the favorite. I mean, they were among the favorites to win it all. But mm-hmm. before the season, this was the Bills conference to win, right? Mm-hmm. And that was the sort of the theme throughout the year. And then they lost to the Bengals again in the regular season. And, you know, were the Chiefs going to get it done? And the Eagles were a favorite in the Super Bowl. So there was some reasons to believe that the Chiefs had to overcome in this year's run. Whereas in the past, you know, they were always you'd always thought of them as the favorite. In fact, before the Eagles game, I think this is right. I think they were favorites in their previous 15 playoff games, no matter where it was played. Now, most of them, of course, were at Arrowhead Stadium. Right. But I think there was a kind of a perception among Chiefs fans that they would they'd have to overcome a little bit to get it done this time, and they did. And So I think that enhanced the feeling from the fans about this Chiefs team.
That's a great point, Blair, because I know there were a lot of receipts out there that Chiefs fans were holding on to from the early prognosticators that were, you know, kind of, you know, I know some of the more dramatic ones were that the Chiefs weren't even going to make the playoffs or, you know, I know Jeff and I, you know, not to backtrack all the way back to the offseason, but we were concerned about the AFC West and we were concerned. My biggest concern was like more of a, less of a strategy one, more of a just a physicality thing, was that the AFC West was going to limp into the playoffs. Whomever was going to be the favorite to come out of it, and whoever was going to, you know, come out on top, whoever did, was going to just be so beat up from, you know, the toughest conference that we thought. And it turns out that it was, you know, the NFC least went to the NFC beast. And the AFC West went to the AFC Lest.
Yes. I like that.
So, you know, and so as I was watching the season progress, Jeff and I talked about it. We're like, man, how different it's turned out that the Chiefs just rose right to the top of the AFC West and the other teams just kind of sank right to the bottom.
Well, at the beginning of the year, the idea was that the Chiefs, you know, had the toughest schedule in mm-hmm. the NFL. Just based on the opponents and the mm-hmm. records of the previous year. And then, of course, you know, playing in the AFC West, where, you know, all the stars, Russell Wilson, Devontae Adams, Khalil Mack, all the stars came to, you know, to bolster up the other teams. As it turned out, by the end of the year, the Chiefs didn't have the NFL's top schedule largely because the AFC West did not live up to the promise of the preseason. But the Chiefs took care of business. That's how they ended up 14-3 in the regular season, because they do what they've always done. They took care of business in the division, and that got them the home games in the playoffs, which, you know, I think the fact that they beat the Jaguars by a touchdown and the Bengals by a field goal and didn't have to play the additional game, didn't have to go to Atlanta to play mm-hmm. the Buffalo Bills, I think all that worked in the Chiefs' favor.
Yeah, they certainly swept the AFC West in impressive fashion. Blair, I'm curious if you have a most interesting anecdote or nugget or observation kind of from the Super Bowl week or Super Bowl experience in Phoenix, not maybe something from the game itself that we've scrutinized so carefully, but maybe even something off the field there.
Oh, I got to think about that a second. One thing that I think maybe flew a little under the radar as we appreciated Patrick Mahomes and the rookie class, right? Who stepped up, so many rookies stepped up in such a big way. Chris Jones, his game in the AFC championship game, I thought that was just a dominant performance. And we can pick out moments and plays that helped Kansas City reach its goal. But one person who pretty instrumental in all this that we haven't, I think, again, flew under the radar a little bit was Harrison Butker and the field goal operation. Mm-hmm. You know, in the history of the Chiefs, you had Jon Stenerud kicking the three field goals in Super Bowl IV to win that. And kind of since then, Harrison Butker has kicked every major field, has been successful with every major field goal attempt and has been pretty instrumental in the Chiefs' success. You know, sending the Patriots AFC title game at 18 into overtime, and, you know, sending the Bengals AFC title game last year into overtime, beating the Bengals this year, beating the Eagles with what we think is a chip shot, you know, 27 yarder, but he missed, you know, hit the upright, doinked one earlier in the game. So, you know, if for a player that came under a lot of scrutiny and a lot of, you know, had a lot of pressure on him because of the injury that happened in the first day of the season, first game of the season out at Arizona, and then had that rough stretch in the middle, I was really happy for Harrison Butker. And it wasn't after the Super Bowl, but it was after the AFC Championship game in the locker room. A couple of reporters went over and talked to him because everybody was talking to Chris Jones and mm-hmm. Travis Kelce and everybody else. And there was Harrison Butker, who just won the game with a tough 45-yarder into the wind that really didn't, you know, cross the bar by more than, I don't know, 10 feet or so. And he breathed a huge sigh of relief and took us through the operation. And anyway, he's the guy that I identified as sort of an unsung hero, and I felt so good for when this was all said and done.
Blair, that great point there, and it's so fascinating. Joe and I were so concerned about the special teams. I really thought that might cost the Chiefs a potential Super Bowl victory, but instead, you mentioned Butker's two game-winning field goals and his contributions, and also the Sky Moore punt return really set up that last Bengals drive of the AFC Championship.
Yeah.
And Kadarius Toney's punt return was really the game-changing moment in the Super Bowl. So they answered any questions, that special team unit.
Our mantra was, don't give Blair anything to write about special teams. Like that's we were dipping into your job security, Blair, because we were like, our mantra was, don't get your name in the paper, special right? teams. Like, let the offense and defense win this game. Specifically, let's really let the offense win this game, right? Because we know how magical Patrick and that offense can be. So yeah, we were trying to give you less work, bud. And Harrison and Sky and Kadarius gave you something to write about, which is great.
Every week, after every game, I grade the Chiefs. That's one of the duties that I have at the game is assigning. And they're instant grades. I mean, they're usually done by the, right at the gun. And so, you know, it's just a quick stab at how I think the game's unfolded for offense, defense, special teams. And it really has kind of broken my heart to downgrade special teams this year, knowing how important it's been for the Chiefs historically and just what a good coach Dave Tobe is and how important – you know, having a good special teams ranking is for him. And it just hadn't been that way this year. Not just, you know, it wasn't just Butker with his with his midseason sort of malaise, but they weren't getting anything, no big return until postseason, really during the regular season. I think Pacheco may have had a good kickoff return in a away game early, but maybe it was at San Francisco to open the second half. I can't really remember it right now, but got to about midfield, but it was just not a year where you saw that, you know, the Tyreek Hill or Mecole Hardman type of return that really set up the Chiefs. And then in the biggest games and the biggest moments, special teams delivered. And again, in the Super Bowl locker room, that was one happy Dave Tobe going around hugging and shaking hands with everybody.
That's great behind the scenes stuff there, Blair. Well, Bet Online remains your number one source for all your sports betting this season. Everything from pro and college basketball to UFC, MMA, and more. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at Bet Online. With live betting options, free contests, and live scores for almost any sport or game imaginable, Bet Online is truly the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite leagues and events. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code BLEAV, BLEAV, to receive your rewards. BetOnline.ag, where the game starts. Blair, we're definitely into the offseason already, even though the Super Bowl doesn't seem like that long ago. The Combine is going on. Andy Reid, Brett Veach spoke on Tuesday. Well, Joe is a lifelong member of the Fools, right, Joe? What does that stand for?
The Fraternal Order of Offensive Linemen. So that's what we call ourselves.
One of the questions of the Fools is a major offseason question. Blair, are you getting any sense whether Andrew Wiley and Orlando Brown, who were so great in the Super Bowl, but are now free agents, are going to be back? Any idea what the Chiefs are going to do there?
Yeah, look, they were great in the postseason, and especially the Super Bowl. I'm sure they're still wearing their T-shirts that have the big zero on them. You know, no sacks allowed against a team that only had 70 of them in the season. So the sense that you decisions on both of them, right? Because they are free agents, and so the sense that you get in the time since the Super Bowl and what Brett Veach has said a couple of times since then is they would like to have both of them back. Now both of them are in line for raises. You know, Andrew Wiley made $2.5 million this year, and he has proven to be, I think, a valuable, diverse player for the Chiefs with his ability to move inside if needed and to play right tackle. Orlando Brown, I'll tell you what, at midseason, I'm thinking there's no way they're going to bring him back. Not for this really average play. For someone who wants to be paid at the top of his position chart, for him to play like this, that's just, you know, he ain't Trent Williams, right? It's not going to happen. And then the second half of the season occurred, and then the postseason occurred, and he was a different player. Mm-hmm. And so I think that they're going to try to work something out with him. He obviously wants a long-term deal. I don't blame him for wanting that. But I would not be surprised if on March 7th we find the franchise tag applied to him for a second straight year, while the Chiefs and his camp try to work something out long term. Mm-hmm. So my guess is offensive line returns intact for next season. They go forward with what they have. And this is similar to what happened 4 years ago when you had the Mitchell Schwartz, you know, Eric Fisher offensive line, and they stayed together through the LDT was a guard on that. Mm-hmm. You know, Austin Ryder, I think, was the center. They moved forward with that offensive line and had success the following year. I think with Trey Smith and Joe Tooney and Creed Humphrey with Nick Allegretti, valuable backup, and hopes for Lucas Niang to, you know, to regain full health, I think the Chiefs feel pretty good about what they have. Now, that doesn't mean we won't see them draft, you know, a tackle, you know, maybe even high. I don't know about first round, but maybe early. But I think on opening day for 2023 against an opponent we don't know, but we know it'll be the Thursday night game, right, because of the Super Bowl champs. I think we'll see the same offensive line that started the Super Bowl.
That's really interesting, Blair, because, yeah, I mean, I had the same thoughts about Orlando earlier. My conspiracy theory was something was nagging him. I don't know why I was thinking that. I mean, obviously, they have to report things if he is hurt and whatnot, and I know there's a lot of rules around that, but I don't know if it was something he wasn't telling somebody or what, but there was just – that was in my heart, and I was just – wondering if he was hiding something and something was nagging him. And because you're right, it seemed like he just seemed like a different player. It's like the best way I could describe it as a former lineman is his feet were like he was in cement, like his feet, mm-hmm. like he was wearing weighted boots. It's the best way I could describe it. And because we know he's got the athletic ability, we know he's got the size, we know he's done it, he's proven. There was just something, it just seemed like something was nagging him. That was my conspiracy theory, but I'm glad to see you think that too. I think they can do that. They could try to, at least, you know, using the term that we used in the last Super Bowls, run it back with at least that offensive line, because it's such a chemistry position. It's a position where everybody needs to know where everybody's going with grunts and groans and hand signals. You can't You can't, and there's no substitute for that ability to play together and build that chemistry like the offensive line. So I'm glad to hear you think that. I hope it, because I think that's going to be critical to their offensive success, as there's some other moving parts that could happen.
Yeah, you're right about the movement of Orlando Brown early. We were wondering in the press box, how is Mahomes going to have to adjust his drop back based on this? You know, because of because Orlando Brown, he was getting beat quite often, and people were going around him, and we're thinking, well, this is, you know, Mahomes is going to just have to be aware of it at all times, and maybe they slide in the protection more often with McKinnon or, you know, whatever, whoever the running back was, because Orlando Brown seemed to be needing more help than a guy who, you know, wants to get paid the amount he wants to be paid should be getting. But yeah, second half playoffs, that was, you know, he was terrific. He really was. He was the, you know, the Pro Bowl, living up to the Pro Bowl selection that he's been with the Chiefs. We kind of shook our heads when he got it last year, but anyway, I've become a fan, and I think that I think the Chiefs are better with him, and no need to go, you know, trading up in the first round looking for that for that left tackle. I think the Chiefs have their left tackle.
You know, I was curious. That was with the two free agent tackles. That was kind of the issue that I'm most interested to see in this offseason. Joe and Blair, I'm curious what you're most interested to see this offseason as the Chiefs try to shape their team and potentially run it back once again for another Super Bowl title.
Well, they certainly have a couple decisions to make. Chris Jones probably needs to be paid like a superstar now, the defensive superstar. And for that to happen, if the Chiefs want that to happen, then they'll have to make some financial decisions elsewhere. Frank Clark would have to get his his contract adjusted, or the Chiefs part ways with him, which some would hate to see, just because of, again, what a nice playoff run he had. They got playoff Frank Clark for the playoffs, which that's what you want. Mm-hmm. But for me, from a position group standpoint, I think it's wide receiver. You know, knowing that Mecole Hardman and Juju Smith-Schuster are going to be free agents, it looks like there'll be some financial opportunity for them in this free agent market. It's not a great year for wide receivers, and there'll be two of the best ones out there. And how are the Chiefs going to approach that, knowing that right now under contract they have Marquez Valdez-Scantling, Sky Moore, Kadarius Toney.
Kadarius,
two of whom scored Super Bowl touchdowns, right? Right. Moore and Toney.
Back-to-back, too. Yes. On the same play.
That's right. Eagles still haven't figured that one out. Yeah. But do you trust Mahomes enough to turn any wide receiver into a more productive person than they've been at other points of their careers? Or do you go out and use the first, number 31 overall to get, the Hyatt kid from Tennessee, or one of the better thought of wide receivers, and try to rebuild a little bit through the draft? So I think they've got some decisions to make there. Certainly on the defensive line, they've got decisions to make. I feel good about the offensive line, about the running back situation, the secondary. L'Jarius needs somebody that's going to need to get paid, but they developed all these great rookie corners this year. I think more so than 4 years ago, there'll be a little bit more of a turnover. The Chiefs actually returned. I know we talk about this in college a lot. How many returning starters do you have?
Right.
But in 4 years ago, the Chiefs had 20 of the 22 guys that started the Super Bowl back to start the opener the next year. I don't think that'll be the case this time. I think we'll see more new faces in the lineup.
Well, and also new faces too, Blair. Like, since your concern is mostly around the offense, and we've talked about, right? I mean, I think we all can say that offense is going to be, just for today's purposes, going to be the one side of the ball that we have to really be concerned about as the combine goes down and the draft and free agency opens up. What about losing Eric? I mean, what are your thoughts on what that does to an evolving offense like this, where we could see some movement at receiver? We've got this sort of developing running back core that is just starting to find its way. And with Clyde kind of slipping down, with, you know, Isaiah Pacheco moving up, like, who, like, what do you think that's going to be for Matt Nagy as he takes over the reins?
Yeah, that's a good question. So Chiefs will have a, well, not a new offensive coordinator, a renewed offensive coordinator in Matt Nagy this time. So, right, Eric Bieniemy moved on to the Washington Commanders. I thought it was interesting, his comments it was on a podcast. I can't remember which one. I wish I knew it off the top of my head to give him credit, but said that, you know, he knew before the season that this was going to be his last year in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. Whether it was going to be a head coaching position or an assistant coaching position, he knew that, you know, it was time to, you know, reestablish himself somewhere else. I think it's a good move for him. We can debate. We can spend a whole nother show to, you know, talking about the issue of you know, the Dartha Black head coaches in the NFL and his particular case, much written about, much discussed. But the fact is, he's now the offensive coordinator for Ron Rivera in Washington. I wish him nothing but the best. I hope mm-hmm. he knocks it out of the park there, and he'll be a head if he really wants to be a head coach pretty soon. But what that does to the offense, that's going to be really interesting, because Andy Reid's, you know, the overseer of the offense. Yeah. As long as that doesn't change, I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of difference in the offensive structure. You know, Girardi's the new quarterback coach. He's kind of taken the path that Mike Kafka took, you know, with the Chiefs, who's now, you know, with the Giants, now an offensive coordinator. So I don't see much changing offensively for the Chiefs, except for some personnel in wide receiver. We'll see what happens with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. There's an interesting decision to be made about the former number one pick, running back pick. I think it's going to be business as usual on the offensive side for the Chiefs.
I'm glad you mentioned Mike Kafka. Well, Justin Watson was mentioned earlier in the episode. So we hit both Joe and my alma maters there. Got a pen in the North. That's rare when we've got an NFL show. And that leads me to my next point, Blair, that getting to college stuff. I grew up in Kansas City, reading your stuff in the Kansas City Star back when you were covering really a lot of college basketball and college football. I love that stuff. So I want to get your take. Is this on college basketball with March Madness around the corner? Is this the most wide open tournament you can remember?
Yeah, look, there's to me, what's different about it is you don't see Duke. You don't see North Carolina and Kentucky. They're going to be in the tournament, but you don't have those guys all fighting for number one seeds along with Kansas. You've got Alabama, you got Houston, you got Purdue. It's kind of cool to see UCLA back toward the top, and Marquette making a run here down the stretch as well. So that to me is what's different. I think it's the same. I don't want to say the same suspects, but it's the usual circle of about, I think, 10 to 15 teams that could win it all. Well, as a lot of Kansas and Texas and Baylor, and maybe put TCU on the Kansas State, of course, with a great year under Jerome Tang in his first year as a head coach. So locally, that's what's really cool about college basketball in Kansas City is how good the Big 12 is, some new faces at the top. When we're talking about who number one seeds are, we're talking about schools like mm-hmm. Alabama, never been a number one seed and never been to a Final Four. So Purdue, you haven't been to a Final Four in a long time. So it's fun to see some new faces up there, especially when the schools in our area, Kansas State and Missouri, are having great seasons and will all be tournament teams.
Do you have a favorite at this point, or is it just too hard to say?
Well, as difficult as it is to repeat as national champion, it hasn't happened since Florida in 06, 07. This Kansas team reminds me of last year's Kansas team. It has an All-America player, Ochai Agbaji last year, Jalen Wilson this year. They won the Big 12 last year and this year as they go into the Big 12 tournament. They have a grit and a toughness about them like last year's team. This year's team a little better defensively, last year's team a little better offensively. We'll see how far it takes them. But it's such a crapshoot, March Madness. It's, you know, it's how the bracket falls, how the teams in front of you play. Does somebody get hot one night the way Agbaji did in the semifinal against Villanova when he hit his first six threes? It is such a crapshoot. That's why greatest sporting event on earth is the NCAA tournament. And I cannot wait for it.
Same. Likewise, Blair. Well, listen, this is we've been here with Blair Kirkhoff at the Kansas City Star. You can read all his Chiefs coverage. As you can tell now, he's getting back into a little bit of college basketball with March Madness around the corner. Blair, thanks so much for joining us.
Really enjoyed it, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Well, if you enjoy the show presented by Bet Online, please subscribe. We're available on your favorite directories, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Luminary, and TuneIn. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.